Good morning, my name is John Kelly. I am the attorney for the appellant in this case. And I would like to reserve 5 minutes at the end of my argument for rebuttal. To begin with, what I'd like to do first is address the GAL's and intervener's argument in their reply concerning whether or not this argument was properly preserved for appeal. Argument was made concerning the application of Section 702, both an opening argument at the permanency hearing in March, and a closing argument. Those can be found at pages 13, 14, 348, 356, and 359 of the trial transcript in this case. Appellant is not arguing that the permanency hearing should not have been held, that it was impermissible to hold a permanency hearing. There seems to be a bit of confusion in a couple of the responsive briefs about that. Our argument is that the law was misapplied at the permanency hearing.
Do you agree that 702 and 703 should have been applied in this case? Your issue is whether it's with how they were applied.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct. And if Judge Richmond, as you're aware, intimately aware, with the mandate in the original case, our argument is not that the permanency shouldn't have been held. In fact, it was required to have been held in an expedited case like this every 6 months. I think that that hearing was certainly proper. The argument that the mandate was inapplicable to this case, I think, is a bit of is not correct. Although this case did not present itself as a second termination trial, the county attorney and the guardian ad litem chose to withdraw the termination. Language in the mandate still applied. On page 18 of the previous decision of this court, the court found, in light and contemplating that either the father had prevailed, well, I think the court was contemplating the father might prevail on the second motion for termination. The court found that the court should also provide a more reasonable period of time to comply with the treatment plan and demonstrate his fitness before the court entertains any future motion to terminate his parental rights. The context out of which that came is the prior division of this court to consider this case and found that there were several defects in the treatment plan and in how the manner in which the case had unfolded with respect to the father.
Right, but as soon as the case got back to the sometime after the case got back to the district court, the county dropped the termination motion.
Correct.
Which seemed to moot the entire point of the remand. What would have been left to do if the treatment plan, and there was not going to be termination, so what was the impact of the treatment plan, if any, at that point in time?
Well, Your Honor, I think that where this comes into play is once the motion was withdrawn, the court was looking at the 702 section, and the court was required to determine if reasonable efforts had been made, that there was procedural compliance with the statutes. The previous division of this court had decided that there were issues with that and had discussed those in a prior opinion. So the dicta in the prior opinion is not inconsistent with Section 702 analysis.
Right.
It's actually quite consistent.
So are you saying that he should have been given more time to prove his fitness or whatever on the treatment plan before the permanency hearing took place? Is that what you're saying? Because you agreed to participate in the permanency hearing, right? You submitted evidence, witnesses, the whole bit.
Right.
I mean, it seemed like you're certainly on board with the permanency hearing, which substituted for the termination procedure.
Yeah,
as I look at the record generally.
Right, and with respect to that, the permanency hearing I see as something that was the court was required to hold. The nuance here is the foster parents intervene, requested custody, and that was combined with the permanency hearing. I think, you know, regardless of what would have happened on remand, a year had gone by, I think the court had to follow the statute, or it held a permanency hearing. The twist to this was, of course, that we now had the participation of the foster parents asking for custody. So, the idea that the father could choose to participate or not participate in this permanency hearing, I think one is required by law. Two, I think he would not participate at his great peril, because it is required to be held every 6 months. It's how the trial court applied the law at the permanency hearing that I'm concerned about.
Let's go to that.
And with that, there's two points. We made a number of points in the brief, but the two points I would like to address. To begin with, under section 7025B, where it talks about removing a child from the foster home. And that's where the trial court decided that language was permissive, gave him some guidance, but he wasn't necessarily required to follow that. And that's why I think the trial court made an error here. And that section, of course, states that if the child is currently in a foster home and the foster parents are capable of providing a permanent home, the trial court shall not be removed from the home if the removal would be seriously detrimental to the emotional well-being of the child. And the trial court seemed to just gloss right over that and say, oh, well, that's a nice suggestion, but I don't necessarily have to hear evidence or make that finding.
Right. But the court did apply 702 subparagraph 4. You don't take issue with that, do you? He did apply 702.4, which says he has to find that there's a compelling reason, I believe, for the child not to be placed with the parent or return home. The court did find a compelling reason that the child should not be returned to the father. You don't take issue with the fact that it did reach that conclusion.
I don't take issue with the fact that the court reached that conclusion. The way I read section 702 is there's a number of things. It's sort of a checklist. You've got at the very beginning, you've got the checklist. Okay, where are we in the big picture? Have reasonable efforts been made? Can the child return home now? We argue that the child could return home now. That's the first part of the checklist. Section 3.5 is another part of the checklist. Section 4 is another part of the checklist.
But they come in order, right? And
correct.
4 comes before 5.
That is
and
correct.
If you assume that the legislature has some logic, and this may be a big assumption, had some logic to its pattern, I don't know how the statute is put together, if the court first says there is a compelling reason that it's not in the best interest of the child to return home, why would it have to go to 5, which also seems optional, and say not only is there a compelling reason, but it would be seriously detrimental to remove it? Had it made the other decision, yes, I think it probably should be returned home, but it may be seriously detrimental to take him out, then I would see how 5 would apply. Do you see what I'm suggesting? I'm suggesting once he finds 4 in favor of not returning the child to the home, the court may not have to reach 5 if it's not taking the child out of the foster home.
Yeah, and my response to that is this. When the interveners came in and filed their motion for custody, that kind of changed the analysis of this, because the court did find at the beginning of its opinion, father is in, certain, for the purposes of my opinion, I'm assuming that father is in full compliance with the treatment plan and so on, and he's a fit parent. But we have this other issue over here, and that's the foster parents are now asking for custody. And so his compelling reason, I think, is intimately tied to that section having to do with foster parents. And I think those are two different standards, because when the foster parents are involved, foster parents who do not have the constitutional rights that a parent has in the upbringing of a child, that serious detrimental emotional well-being standard would apply in order to get over that threshold and award custody. I mean, I realize that's not a termination, but it still is a significant intrusion into the father's constitutional rights.
Well, you don't disagree that 702.4 was applied. Do you take issue with the factual findings the court made under 702.4 that it was not in the best, that there were compelling reasons? he gave a long list of what he considered compelling reasons.
Yeah.
Do you think those are erroneous factual findings?
I think some of those were the mere passage of time, and that's why I get back into the mandate, where the court found that there were some procedural flaws in the original proceeding, and saying, listen, this is a father that needs some more time to comply with the treatment plan.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get into the whole ruling of the court appears to center around primarily the passage of time. And a year of that passage of time is the father trying to set things right with the first appeal. And as the court notes in his first decision, the visitation plan was flawed. There was a number of issues that were inconsistent in the first part of that case. And so when you have, if we're simply just totally basing this on the passage of time as a compelling reason, I am saying that is not.
Well, I would say he put on the child's need for stability, not just the passage of time.
I'm sorry?
I think the court was focusing on the child's need for stability in her life, not just the passage of time. And the stability emerged from her being with the foster parents over the period of time. But I understand your point.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you have 4 minutes left, counsel.
Okay. And did I fully answer your
question? Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah.
Okay. And with that, I'd like to reserve the remaining 4 minutes.
Okay.
Good morning. My name is Linda Boulder. My registration number is 15908, and I'm the special county attorney for the La Plata County Department of Human Services. I'd like to thank you for letting me speak today about our case. Division 5 of the Colorado Court of Appeals probably didn't anticipate that the La Plata County Department of Human Services and GAL would refrain from proceeding with termination of father's parental rights. Why did we, brief word permanency? On a practical note, after February 2013, our judge who originally heard the termination had retired. We were assigned a newly appointed district judge who had no experience with dependency and neglect cases. But more importantly, he hadn't heard the evidence firsthand at the initial hearing in order to judge the credibility of those original witnesses at the termination hearing, as well as weigh the evidence that supported the termination. This basically meant setting out time to hold or redo the entire multi-day termination hearing for those witnesses, one of whom had retired as well, regarding events that were now 3 years old, in addition to hearing evidence that occurred since the first appeal came down.
Well, counsel, did you not believe that you could prevail on the termination hearing at that point?
You know, we weren't certain, but our greater concern was the fact that this child was still suspended in foster care and a decision needed to be made where she was. And even if we would have heard done this multi-day termination hearing, a least drastic, one of the elements of termination is there a least drastic alternative available? And in this case, we have some remarkable foster parents. I would say foster parents like this only constitute about 10% of the foster parent population, but they were willing to have an ongoing relationship with this father who was doing well, but was still under the auspices of supervised probation. And that was our greatest concern throughout the course of this case. So would we have prevailed? I'm not sure, but if it was already a less drastic alternative, why not just go to the permanency hearing and do it and get it done quicker and get this child some resolution? She had already seen a child who went into foster care with the same family, like the same day or within days of her going to care. She had seen this child get adopted, and you've got a 4 or 5 year old going, well, you know, when's my turn? When's my party? What's going to happen with me?
Well, but if resolution was your goal, it seems to me that the termination hearing would have been a win-lose situation, as opposed to the APR, which extends it out and has additional hearings.
Well, except, you know, from the mandate from the Division 5 said, you know, if you don't learn at the termination hearing, you give father a treatment plan. And the problem was an appropriate treatment plan is a plan, it's defined in 19.1.103.10 as a plan reasonably calculated to render a parent fit to provide adequate parenting to the child within a reasonable time and which relates to the child's needs. This child had a need for stability. She had a need for a decision. So you really couldn't draft. How could you draft an appropriate treatment plan in that respect? The code does provide in some situations that no treatment plan can be devised, but it's based more on the mental health of the parent, not this situation where you have a child in limbo that's, that according to ASFA, the Adoption and Safe Family Act, which is 19-3-702 is patterned after, kids deserve, especially these little kids, they deserve a decision after being in foster care for 12 months.
Okay.
So, as I said, if termination wasn't upheld, we'd be faced with drafting an appropriate treatment plan for the father. And again, an appropriate treatment plan would have had to extend 6 months beyond this coming January 2015, because that's when his probation ends. We would want to see compliance past that. And the department has held steadfastly to that requirement of demonstration of sobriety outside of probation, because father is a 33-year-old man at the time, had a 20-year-old history with alcohol and drugs. So this is new territory for him. Has he been able to have periods of sobriety before? Sure, in between incarcerations and whatnot, but it's new territory.
Well, assuming we applied a decision to drop the termination and proceed with permanency, which
yeah.
I think we can, did the judge properly handle the permanency, or did one of the other co-counsel want to address those arguments about the statute?
I think this new judge did an excellent job with handling permanency. The only situation that I would take, maybe disagree with, I do believe that the element of 5B under 702 was satisfied with the testimony of the child's play therapist, that if you pull her out of this home, this is going to be like a death to her, and that she will be at risk if father relapses, then she's at even more risk.
So even though the judge didn't use the specific language, seriously detrimental to the emotional well-being, you're saying the record would have supported such a finding had it been necessary to make one?
I believe so.
Okay. Then the question is, legally, is it necessary to make the finding under 5B, or is it, as I would describe, an alternative or step in the decision tree if 4 is not reached?
I would agree with the judge's reading of that of the statute. I personally thought the finding was there, but I would agree with the judge's with his interpretation.
The finding wasn't there in the language, seriously detrimental. You won't find that language in his.
No, he said it wasn't. I mean, he didn't find, I have to go
he
back.
He didn't use the language, seriously, but you're saying he made findings that would support such a conclusion.
No, he didn't, but I believe he could have.
Could have, okay.
So, I just want to say in closing, for this decision to be reversed and the permanency to be set aside would constitute the greatest disservice to this 5-year-old child and be completely contrary to ASPA and the Children's Code. The state of Colorado, as parents patriae, has a duty to provide this child with permanency that's in her best interest, not her father's. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Beth Padilla. My bar number is 43520, and I'm the guardian ad litem for MD, the child in this case. I think it's important to provide a little context as far as my role. I have been the child's guardian ad litem since the fall of 2012. I am requesting that this court uphold the trial court's decision to allocate criminal responsibilities to the foster parent interveners. And I'm also asking that this court maintain father's parental rights. I think that is very important. Father is having visits with the child, and I believe that that's important for her well-being. I've been involved in this case for a few years, and I've seen this child develop from essentially a toddler to a young girl who's ready to start kindergarten in 2 weeks. That's very important. She's been with the same foster family for 3 years, 2 months. 27 days as of today. That's a long time. She was placed originally in May of 2011, briefly returned to father's care, and then went back into the same foster home again within a couple of days. So since May I believe 17th of 2011, this child has been with the same caretakers, the same siblings, and in the same placement. I think that's a very important piece for this court. I think it also helps provide some context as to why I agreed to proceed with APR instead of a motion to terminate father's parental rights. MD deserves permanency. It was required within 12 months pursuant to 19-3703. We're well beyond that. I think it's appropriate for her to remain where she is, and that's why I'm asking the court to do what I'm asking. I'd like to briefly speak as to the findings that the court made.
Let me ask a question first. The plan that was adopted by the court does provide, I haven't read it, I have to confess, I'm not even sure it's in the record, frankly. It does provide for some progressive additional visitation for the fathers to kind of stage it or step up plan?
Absolutely.
Is there even a possibility that sometime down the road the father could become the custodial parent?
I think that's always possible under an allocation of parental responsibilities, and that is a concern when we consider permanency. Mm-hmm. Essentially, I feel that we're charged in this situation with balancing mm-hmm. permanency and a least restrictive alternative. Mm-hmm. A least restrictive alternative to terminating father's rights is obviously an allocation of parental responsibilities. However, father is going to be able to petition the court every 2 years under Title 14 to, mm-hmm. to potentially change that mm-hmm. parenting arrangement.
But the plan does call for increased visitation
Absolutely.
Over a period of time.
It does.
And I just have to ask this question. The foster parents live in Bayfield.
Correct.
The father lives where? In Cortez?
In Cortez, that's
How
correct.
How far are those?
Let's see, it would be about an hour and 15 minutes.
Wow, and the drop-off point that the judge picked is like somewhere in between there?
Correct, I believe it's in Hesperus, Colorado, which is about the most
So you're saying about a 45-minute drive each way for each parent, each custodian?
Correct.
Each
I believe that is the plan, although I would apologize if it perhaps is in Mancos, Colorado instead of Hesperus, but it's pretty close to the middle.
Well, change it from Mancos to Hesperus, I think.
I think there was some discussion about that before the trial court. So she is visiting with her father, and I think that's going well. And I think that it was appropriate for us to do what we did, and it is in the child's best interest. To speak to the findings, although this hasn't been raised today, it was in father's brief, and made a statement that the court did not make the appropriate findings pursuant to 19-1-115, 6.5, subsection 6.5. And my position is that only applies when the court is continuing an out-of-home placement. The district court judge does not consider this an out-of-home placement any longer. At this point, he's made a decision that the child is going to live with the foster parents. We're going to close the case. The case has been closed. There's no longer a dependency and neglect case. And so therefore, this child is no longer in an out-of-home placement. So those findings are not required from my perspective. Briefly, I also just want to touch on findings under 19-3702. My understanding is that I believe it's this court in the case in the interest of NB has stated that lack of findings pursuant to 19-3702 3.5 does not by itself establish that the magistrate failed to observe any sort of procedural safeguards. So I think that issue has already been addressed by this court. I'm going to stop so that the other attorney can speak with you.
Good morning, I'm Diane Van Voorhees, attorney registration number 32753, appearing on behalf of the foster parent interveners. Our foster parents substantially agree with the statements of facts made by the department and by the guardian ad litem today, and definitely agree with the legal arguments that they presented. They would also emphasize the fact that they did file in the domestic relations court a petition for allocation of parental rights and responsibilities. And pursuant to the statute, 19-1-104 sub 4 sub A, that sort of proceeding is required to be certified to the juvenile court when there is a juvenile court proceeding. So I don't think that that's something that father brought up in his brief. I think he really emphasized a lot more on the court's errors regarding how it applied the law and on father's inability to have his constitutional rights preserved in the case. So I disagree with his interpretation today, but that was a major part of the issue in that case, and that substantially changed the landscape. Intervener Foster Pence also just generally say that because father did not object, and we continue to, and my position continues to be on their behalf, that he did not object to the permanency hearing, that he participated, and he didn't preserve the right to appeal the trial court's decision not to follow the mandate. And it's also their position that his constitutional rights were protected. The case law that he has cited in his brief really doesn't apply to people in the DNN proceeding. Troxel is for people who aren't in a DNN proceeding, and that's where the court would say, the court would say that a parent would act in the best interest of the child.
Why do you say the constitutional rights of Troxel don't apply in a DNN proceeding? Is that because you're saying once there's been an adjudication of dependence and neglect, that constitutional right is lost?
Yes, sir.
So that presents an interesting question, because despite the fact that there was a DNN finding here, they never went the next step and terminated. They like sort of switched gears. So does this father not have constitutional rights under Troxel, under a permanency proceeding? Or we're doing an APR, which is more like a divorce case anyway? So they do have constitutional rights?
Well, Your Honor, the Children's Code doesn't use the same best interest standards as Title 14. They use the best interest standards under the Children's Code. Mm-hmm. And so my position would be that we're still talking about a permanency hearing that came about because of a dependency in the Black case. Mm-hmm. And but for that fact, we wouldn't have had this situation at all. Mm-hmm. So yes, Troxel wouldn't apply to those fathers.
Right.
And I think that CM also clearly stands for that proposition. I don't know that it necessarily gets to what you're saying as far as the APR change from the termination hearing, but we're also talking about APRs when we're talking about Troxel, so.
Right, but there the constitutional right exists in the APR, so that's what I'm saying. The filer doesn't lose his constitutional right in APR. He might in a DNN if there's an adjudication or there's a termination, but it seems a little different than an APR. I don't know. I haven't seen a case that addressed it, but I'll look at CM.
Okay. And I would say, on top of that, that the case of In Re CCRS, 892 Pacific Second, 246 at 256, also stands for the fact that even if the biological parent has a first and prior right to custody, which may be it can be rebutted by evidence establishing that the welfare of the child or best interest of them here at Thurston by granting custody to a non-parent. And I think that's ultimately what happened in this case, and the foster parents would respectfully request that this court affirm the order of the lower court.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
And Mr. Kelly, you have 3 minutes and 51 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Troxel question brings up an interesting point. In the judge's order that's under appeal on page 2 of that order, Judge Herringer found that this parent was a fit parent for purposes of his argument. Troxel applies when you have a fit parent. This court found that there's a fit parent. Troxel analysis applies when there's a fit parent. I think that the outcome would be quite a bit different if the court found that dad's got some problems, he's an unfit parent, he's not appropriate to parent this child. The argument of the county attorney is quite interesting in that the decision making that came out about why they chose not to pursue the motion to terminate any further because they were concerned about they would give dad more time to comply with a treatment plan. And if I'm not misunderstanding what the county attorney is arguing, by withdrawing that, they wanted to cut that opportunity off and cooperate with the interveners for the allocation of parental responsibility. That brings us right back into 702.3.5, the finding where the judge has to make a finding that procedural safeguards to preserve the parental rights of the fit parent have been applied in connection with any change of the child's placement or any determination affecting parental visitation of the child. The county, the people have admitted that they chose a course of action, that we're not going to give the father an opportunity to finish out a treatment plan, prove that he has the ability to continue to apply with that, however long that would have to be.
But, Kelly, let me ask you this. Having fully participated in the permanency hearing and not being satisfied with the result, what is it at this point that the father wants?
What the father is asking for is, ideally, is return the child today, a complete reversal and remand. Short of that, asking the court to make correctly apply, in my estimation, the Section 5 to determine whether or not there's a substantial risk of harm, allowing him to prove compliance with the treatment plan and work toward reunification of the child.
Substantial risk of harm? You mean seriously detrimental?
That's correct, Your Honor. I understand that.
Let me take you back a step. Your procedural argument is that the father should have been given the full additional time to comply with the treatment plan and prove himself fit. However, 2 minutes before you said it, you said the court found that the father was assumed to be fit. So what's the procedural defect seems to have been cured by the judge's assumption that the father was fit?
Yeah, and Your Honor, that's a very interesting point. I think that you're correct. What we're asking for is, the father's fit, the father's in compliance with the treatment plan. What needs to happen is an adequate transition plan for the child. We don't just pull the child out of this environment, move to the father overnight without some kind of thought being put into what's in her best interest and how to accomplish.
Isn't that what the court did here?
The court has set up an allocation of parental responsibility. Right. Dad has residual visitation rights.
With a progressive, as I'm saying, with a progressive additional
progressive,
visitation. I don't know what exactly.
Progressive visits. Yeah. He would have to meet a burden in the DR case in order to get full custody back. But in essence, he's a co-parent with foster parents forever.
Right. You know. Better than termination.
That is true.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And thank you all. I didn't know if you'd be able to get all three of you in 15 minutes. You did a nice job with that. I thank all of you for your fine arguments. The case will stand submitted. An opinion will issue in due course. This concludes the court's docket for today. The court will be in an adjournment. And for the additional 7 minutes.